After years on the road, Timmy parked the van and picked up the mic to bring you this podcast that features interviews with people from hardcore to hair metal. This is Talk To Me with your host, Joshua Toomey.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Talk To Me. This is episode 87, and this is Haran from Battlecross. Listen as we talk some Battlecross, and then break down Slayer's Seasons in the Abyss. I am Joshua Toomey, and joined with me this week is Mike, at Music Mags and Wax on Twitter. What's going on, Mike?
Not much, man. Thanks for having me on again.
I feel like this could be a recurring thing. You never know.
Maybe. You never know, man.
If you want to reach out to the show on Twitter, it's at Talk To Me Talk on Twitter. Facebook is facebook.com/talktometalk, and you can always reach out and email the show directly. It's talktometalk@gmail.com. But this week, we will start out with an iTunes review. So make sure you're heading over to your iTunes and leaving a nice 5-star rating and a nice 5-star review. And this week, it comes from Def Hydro. And the title of this is One of My New Favorite Podcasts. And it goes like this. I've listened to 2 episodes and am now a fan. I'm always on the look for a podcast pertaining to horror movies and hard rock slash metal. And this fits one of the criteria. Love the stories that Josh gets from the guest. The conversations are always so fluid, unlike this reading, never skipping a beat, and keep up the good work. So thanks, Def Hydro, out there on iTunes. And make sure you guys are out there leaving a nice 5-star rating and a nice 5-star review. So what's going on in the world of music for you there, Mike?
In the world of music for me, with this show, you hit all the metal ends of the spectrum, and I'm a little bit more scattered all over the place, I guess. So I don't know. The only thing I've been into all this week that you've been giving me shit about, and I can't, how do we say here, it gives me joy to keep telling you how well done this Blind Melon reissue of Soup is. I know your listeners are like, Blind Melon, no. But yeah, nothing that makes me happier than sending you a screenshot of what I'm listening to, and you're like, lame.
So Blind Melon, was that their second album?
Yeah.
And then
it's their best, I believe, to me.
What was going on around the time of that album? Did Shannon Hoon pass away like soon after that, right before it?
Afterwards, yeah, afterwards. I believe it. I think that was like 1995, something like that. Ooh, should have been like my senior year of school, I guess it was, something like that. And I'm not sure if they finished that tour or were on tour, but he croaked in his bus, you know?
Yeah.
To put it not in a very good term, I guess, to use. I don't know. But yeah, man. There's a lot of heroin going on, I guess.
Right. So there's definitely been 2 copies of this album sold, one to you and one to Dean Del Rey. And I'm pretty sure it's probably the only 2 copies that were sold.
Del Rey knows what's up.
Blind Melon talk.
We shot pictures of our LP back and forth to each other. It's like, oh, I'm holding off to get this until I know it sounds good. And I already got it, so sounds great. Go get it. Next thing I know, in my inbox, there's a picture of his stereo receiver with his copy sitting on top of it.
Fucking Blind Melon. So with Blind Melon, you know, to me, there is basically No Rain, and there's, you know, nothing else. I never got into Blind Melon. I've told you before, I bought that cassette back in the day, and that's one of the albums that I've listened to when I was a kid. And I guess I love the song No Rain so much. And I guess the first album doesn't sound like No Rain, so I was truly bummed out when I bought that album as a kid, and I think I still hold a grudge.
Oh, come on. Yeah, you bought Hook, Line, and Sinker. You went for the B-Girl video, and man, that album's great. I mean, Soup knocks it out of the water, but it also made me feel better when Classic Metal Show last week or week before, one of their clips, Chris Aiken's talking about, you know, he's a Blind Melon fan. So, hey, what else do I need? I have Chris Aiken, Dean Del Rey on my side. I'm in good company.
I don't know how good company that is. Dean Del Rey and Chris Aiken might be.
Hey, well, you know, we'll be the 3 Blind Melon Stooges.
Right. Well, and I guess we can move that on to another classic metal show tie-in. We're going to talk about, you know, the Dawkins show coming up soon in Hazard, Kentucky. I don't even know where Hazard, Kentucky is. So tell me where Hazard, Kentucky is.
Let's see. It's about 3 hours from Louisville, and there's a guy down there, Greg Napier, and he's pulling in just all kinds of, from my, I guess, favorite genre, the genre I grew up in, that whole 80s hard rock, heavy metal, whatever you want to call it, hair band, any term you can think of that goes along with it, he's pulling in guests or bands, I should say, into Hazard, man. A little place in the middle of nowhere. And he pulls in people that just get passed over from this city, of course. But this will be our second trip down there to see the Dokken show. And no Dokken reunion here. You know, it's Don and Mick and their band. And this will be my second trip to see three quarters of the band. We went last summer to see the Lynch Mob and Striper. And so now I got to go
people
back.
How many people are at a show like that?
You know, for it to be in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
He pulls in a lot of people. His shows pull in a lot of people. He's had Glenn Hughes, a former guest of Talk To Me. He's had Glenn there. He's had just a lot of people. You know, I could go down a list. And it's in the middle of nowhere. Where we stayed at, there was a hotel in the parking lot. There was an Applebee's and a grocery store and mountains. That was it. Wow. And then the venue where the place is. But it's pretty much sold out. It was packed. You know, he had people in from Chicago, from New York, from up from Florida. All kinds of people came in.
What's sold out? Like 100 people, 500 people?
I believe the place is like an old courthouse building, something like that. And it's one big room, basically. I couldn't tell you, Josh, what it holds, but it was pretty packed. And I don't know if Greg's friendship with Neely and Chris and Classic Metal, but he's been on there a few times, and you know, their reach is
far and wide.
Yeah, exactly. And he's been on there a few times, and you know, they've had him on, and you know, that helps pull people in, I guess. I don't know, but if you live in like this area and you're wanting to see, you know, some of the people he gets in, that's probably 2.5-3 hours in a bad drive to see some of the people he's pulling in.
What's the babe situation out there? What's it look like? Saw a lot of hot chicks, or a lot of like chicks stuck in the 80s?
It's still 1987 down there. And music wise, but I don't know, man. I couldn't tell you. It gets kind of scary. But it's all good people, man. That's all that matters.
That's cool.
It was a great time. There wasn't a whole lot of craziness going on. Everybody was there, you know, have a good time and, you know, see Lynch Mob. And, man, that was a great show.
I'll take your word for it.
I'm going to drag you to Dokken. I'm going to drag you down there.
I'm not going.
I don't care what your work schedule is, Mr. Mailman. You're coming with me.
I will not be rocking with Dokken.
Well, I'll be there. Greg's got me set up with some great, you know, photo pass access. So I guess Talk To Me listeners, keep an eye out for some of that coming your way.
Very cool. And yeah, we'll have to get you down there. You can take the recorder, and you got to sit there, and you got to get an interview with Don Dokken.
Yeah, and I may even hit record this time.
Maybe.
Don doesn't seem like the kind of guy that I want to get through everything like I did with Jimmy Bauer and say, man, we have a problem here.
Yeah, he may just take you out back and just take you to town.
He seems like that dude, man, from interviews and stuff I've heard him in. So, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Well, cool, man. Let's talk about some music here. Let's move into our Talk To Me cover of the week. Let's talk about 36 Crazy Fists doing one of my favorite songs of all time. It's Digging the Grave, and Digging the Grave by the great Faith No More. Absolutely love the album that this is off of, and probably one of their more underrated albums. You know, King for a Day, Fool for a Lifetime, start to finish. I love that album, you know, up there with, I might like that one probably more than I like The Real Thing, if you want to get to into it. Obviously, it'll never pass up Angel Dust, but King for a Day, Fool for a Lifetime, great album.
Yeah, that's underrated. I'll give you that. I'm a big fan of Faith No More. I'm a big fan of Angel Dust. And what hooked me with Faith No More was, did I say Faith No More? Sorry. What hooked me with Faith No More was The Real Thing. That was the first album with, you know, Mike Patton. And I think that was like 1989. And that's really, it just came out like a punch in the face, I guess is the best way to describe it compared to all the glam stuff that was going on at the time. It was completely, you know, left of center. And shit, man, I'm a vinyl collector and just music collector in general. And shit, man, I can't tell you. I have the original press of The Real Thing. I have the cassette CD, long box CD, the green vinyl reissue. Nice. I have the 180 gram reissue. Yeah, it's a sickness. But they have announced, I think they're doing another one, but I probably won't buy that. At least that's what I tell my wife.
Right, she will never notice if you just put it in the middle of all that.
Yeah, what's another copy?
And then this cover is done by 36 Crazy Fist. A couple of reasons I wanted to bring that up. One, they are in the studio right now. They just finished tracking their new album. Two, their drummer Kyle Baltus, former guest of the podcast. He was on a podcast called John's Untitled Podcast. And during that episode, he threw a shout out to this episode or this podcast. So I definitely have to give him that. And, you know, obviously talk to John of John's Untitled Podcast. Talk to him a little bit this week. Turns out to be a pretty cool guy and a listener of the Talk To Me podcast now. So that's much appreciated there. So you guys make sure and go check out John's Untitled Podcast. John's Untitled Podcast with guest Kyle Baltus. A cool episode and a fun chat with that guy. And, you know, I just love 36 Crazy Fist. And another band, another entity that is sponsored by Puck Hockey, as in the Talk To Me cover of the week brought to you by puckhockey.com, and that's P-U-C-K-H-C-K-Y. Head over there, make sure you check out all the 36 Crazy Fist stuff. They have stuff from Doyle, Head P.E., Tom Hazard, Dave Ellison, so much great stuff over there. They've got hockey player stuff. They've got their own line, all these fantastic Puck Hockey t-shirts, and Shop Till You Drop. Use the promo code TALK as in TALK TO ME at checkout for 10% off your entire order. Yes, that's TALK at checkout for 10% off your entire order. Okay, so for the TALK TO ME cover of the week, this is 36 Crazy Fist doing Digging the Grave.
You're listening to TALK TO ME. It would be wrong to ask you why, because I know what goes inside is only half of what comes out. Isn't that what it's about? It's about to I got a lie. Lay something in the dark.
Chris Cale from Five Finger Death Punch. You're listening to Talk to Me. Just like Jekyll and Hyde.
All this anger inside. All right, guys, that was 36 Crazy Fists doing a cover of Faith No More's Digging the Grave. And it was a quick story. It was 1997. Faith No More is on their final tour out there doing, I guess they were on the Album of the Year tour. A little band called Limp Bizkit was opening for them at the Masquerade in Atlanta. 12 Volt Negative Earth, a couple months later, was going to be opening for Limp Bizkit in Nashville. So I went down and somehow talked my way backstage and saw some crazy shit in the Limp Bizkit dressing room that we'll get into in a later date. But after the show, I was hanging out, and I had gotten some passes somehow, walked by, and I look over, and in Faith No More's dressing room, Mike Patton is just standing there by himself, kind of, he was dressed, but he was still getting ready to maybe leave or whatever, and I was kind of standing and waiting, and I had an old camera, wait, hopefully get a picture with him, and finally, I just, like, got the balls enough to walk into Faith No More's dressing room by myself and just said, "Man, I'm sorry, man, but can I get a quick picture?" And he was like, the nicest person. He was like, "Yeah, man, no problem." And we didn't have anybody to take it because I was by myself. So he took the camera from me. He's like, "Don't worry, man, I'm a professional." And like held it out like you would a selfie. But this was like 97, so this is pre-selfie. He goes, "I'm a professional." Took the picture, thanked me. I said, "Thank you." Left him, let him be. And I left and I get the picture back. It's a cool fucking picture, man. I've posted it on Facebook a few times, but yeah, man. And that was 20 years ago now. So crazy times beating on Mr. Mike Patton.
Wow. So Josh Toomey and Mike Patton invented the selfie.
Yeah, we were bros back then, and that we were trying to get it to be called like taking a Patton or taking a Toomey. No one would ever take that into consideration.
Taking a Toomey.
Taking a Toomey.
I'll go with that.
Maybe if you take a picture with me, it's called Taking It To Me now. Taking It To Me. And then this week's guest is Haran from Battlecross. We talk about their current, they just finished up their tour with Superjoint, but they were on the Superjoint tour at the time. And we did an album breakdown like we did with Far Beyond Driven a few episodes ago. So we sat down and talked track by track of Seasons in the Abyss, one of my favorite Slayer albums. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. But what I was going to try, I kept trying to tell you before we started recording, and I was trying to wait for the podcast itself, was Haran and I sat there and talked, and they did a cover of Fucking Hostile. And I asked him in the interview, I was like, "Do you think Phil will come out and sing it with you?" And he's like, "Man, I haven't even brought that up to him or even thought about it or whatever." And I was like, "You got to start playing it at soundcheck or just goof it off or just kind of slyly, get him a copy of it or attach it to an email, somehow get it to him." And I don't know what the backstory is, but yesterday being Saturday, they posted a video of the final show, and Phil came out and sang Fucking Hostile with them. So this is the precursor in the interview, and then I guess it came to fruition yesterday. So congratulations to Haran and the rest of Battlecross for that. That had to be amazing.
Yeah, the show you and I were not present for.
We were there in spirit.
Yeah, I guess. That would have been pretty nice.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. I tell you what, I told you last week, I know a little bit more now after going to that show and seeing Battlecross. I've kind of dug into their discography, so to speak, I guess.
Yeah.
And Haran was blasting solos like a foot away from my face, man. And ever since the show, I'm hooked on Battlecross.
So. Awesome. There's another thing in that video where they do Fucking Hostile is Haran was telling me that Phil had walked up to him and he was singing like, "If Haran so far away," and he kept telling that Haran that he needed to start a Duran Duran cover band and call it Haran and all sort of stuff. So in the video of them playing Fucking Hostile, Phil walks out singing Haran so far away. And I was like, nice. So he kills two things in our interview with one video post, basically.
Well, it gives you a little look into Phil's diverseness in music. Because if you remember when you and I saw him at his spoken word show, he gave a little description of you know, writing sessions with Superjoint on, was it the first album or the second album? He came in one day and had zero lyrics.
Yeah.
And the band was jamming and he just started singing
the Smiths. The Smith
lyrics. Yeah.
No, that's cool. Man. Great to see Phil out there doing that with those guys. And it was, I know it had to be, goosebumps for, I got goosebumps watching it just because of how long Haran and I talked about it. So I know for him, it had to be absolutely amazing. And, you know, Haran's up there and he kills the solo, you know, he does his best dime bag up there. That's the one thing with Pantera covers too, is you never, they never seem to get the solos right. And when with Haran and Battlecross and what they did with the fucking Hostile cover, you know, I think they did the solo justice.
Let me ask you a question real quick.
All right.
I don't want to go off on a long tangent about it, but you know, there's always the talk of there. You know what I'm going for, I should say. There's always the talk of Phil and Vinny burying the hatchet and calling Rex and calling Zach. I mean, I just saw Zach. Were you at that show?
I didn't go to that show. No.
Okay. Now I get that Zach and Dime are great friends or were great friends. Do you think it would really be if they really ever did anything? I mean, is it just, does it have to be set in stone with Zach, or is there anybody else out there that you could see filling that role?
I don't think so. I think what it is for most fans, I think Zach was probably the only one that's talented enough to do it, but he's also the only one that kind of had that stamp of approval from Dime, especially towards the later years of Dime's life. I mean, there's so many photos in Guitar World and things like that with him and Dime or him and Zach. So I think that's where the stamp of approval of Zach comes from. I mean, I'm sure there are thousands of guitar players out there that could do a decent job. I'm trying to rack my brain here and pull one out. They would stick with
the star power of basically the drawing of Zach being in the band, and that's what everybody, because you know, you heard all the same questions I did at that spoken word show, and that's the name that just always gets brought up if there would ever be a Pantera, reunion, so to speak.
I mean, who else would it be? I mean, would you, you know, it's not going to be Kerry King. I mean, he's not.
No.
It's not going to be, you know, what would you do? Pantera featuring Marty Friedman on guitar or something, you know?
I know how it sounds to some people, but I just feel like it's been put out there so much by fans and all these other people. I almost just for my own.
All right, we're living in this. I'll give you this one. So we're living in this, you know, you're going to see Dokken, who is just singer and drummer, or Bobby Blotzer's Rat, or you know, there's not.
No, I'm not going to Bobby Blotzer's Rat.
Well, sorry. I know you're not. No, I'm just saying like that. We live in this world of, there's so many of those bands out there now. So, what keeps a Phil from doing Pantera with only Rex in the band, or you know, like how, what's I would probably go see that, you know. I would be there with you, but
you can't not have Vinny there.
I might be pissed and I might come on here and rant about it, but I would still go see it, you know, guess, because I mean, when Phil did Metal Allegiance or something, was that like 5 years ago, they did a tribute to Vulgar Display of Power, I believe, where they played all the songs off of that. And that was, you know, 5 years in internet terms. I mean, that was a long time ago. And I think I watched a live stream of that at like 2 a.m. Watched that as it went along. So, you know, people are still clamoring for it. I think that question will always be out there.
Well, we'll see what happens. I'm sure something's going to happen eventually, but, you know.
Phil Anselmo's Pantera Experience.
There you go. What a great name.
I'm totally there. All right. So for this week, oh man, where's my water? So the interview this week is with Haran from Battlecross. This is episode 87. And without any more of my ramblings and any more of Mike's nonsense, let's talk to Haran from Battlecross.
This is Schwa from Our Dying Day. It's time to turn the world off and crank the volume to 11. You're listening to Talk To Me on Los Anarchy Radio.
All right, cool. Let's see. say your last name.
Durrani Yagala.
All right. So you're Haran from Battlecry.
Yeah.
All right, man. We are sitting here with Haran from Battlecross once again. Man, it feels like we're just old friends by now.
Yeah.
Coming through every few months.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking, it's funny that the three times I've seen you in person now have all been pretty much Phil Anselmo related.
Yeah.
You came down for the Phil Anselmo meet and greet, and then we did the Pantera Far Beyond Driven episode last time you were down, and then now you're coming through on tour with Superjoint. I mean, yeah. What's that like for you?
I tell you, man, it's like a childhood dream coming true, man. Like, Phil Anselmo is such a big inspiration for me. Pantera, of course, being the number one inspiration. But, I mean, just his other projects, I've always been a fan of. Down, Superjoint. Honestly, anything that he's sort of been involved in, I tried to follow. And I just have the utmost respect for the dude. And like I said, been a huge fan. So it's been a fucking honor to be a part of this tour. And the fact that, you know, we were chosen to be on this tour is really fucking...
When did you hear that you were...
It was actually pretty last minute. So Power Slave was originally supposed to be on it, and they dropped off, and we got the call. Like, we were on the Winter Warriors tour in New Jersey, and we got a text from my manager saying, hey, Superjoint is asking us to be direct support for this tour. We need to know if we're doing this by tonight. I'm like, fuck yes.
Why did you even call me?
Yeah. Yes. Yes, we're doing it. So, yeah, the next day they announced it, you know, and it's just awesome. And not only just being a part of a tour that is with Superjoint, but it's, as for us, it's been really good.
Yeah.
Because we've been playing in front of a lot of new people, and we've been making some new fans, and I think we've just been going out there and killing it on this with this crowd. So, yeah, it's awesome.
How's the obviously, being a huge fan, and like we've stated, I mean, what's the interactions with Phil been like for you?
Really awesome, man. I mean, you know, he's a pretty reserved guy, so he's not always hanging around. But when I do see him, he's just so friendly. And because we've had that interaction in the past, you know, it's like he comes over and hugs me.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I don't know if he'll do it tonight, but he said, so... He had this joke. I was sitting on the bus hanging out with the guys, and he came out and he's like, Haran, Haran. And he's like, you got to start a side project called Haran, Haran, but you cover the Flock of Seagulls song, Haran, Haran so far away. And like, so that is like the running joke
right, with
Phil and me is I have to start a project called Haran Haran and cover that Flock of Seagulls song.
It's just to see him singing that alone would probably be
yeah,
worth
man.
This entire
it's just
tour.
It's a trip, dude. I was so just seeing Phil saying this to me, I was just like, yes. Like, I even know what to say right now. It's just this is funny, but I'm like absolutely like if he's for real, I'm terrified and like excited at the same time.
Right.
No, it's awesome, man. And he's so supportive, and he's just said nothing but kind words. And you know, it's really cool. It's really humbling, you know, to have someone you respect so much and like, you know, as a huge influence. I mean, obviously, I'm not a vocalist, but just what he's done musically with Pantera and all his other projects, it's inspirational. That, you know, to have someone like him say some very supportive words about Battlecross is it's awesome.
What did he ever hear your Pantera cover, as he says?
I don't know, and I still haven't brought up trying to get him out on stage to cover that with us. I don't know if
that'll
happen.
You only have a couple days left, right?
Yeah, we have 2 weeks left.
Okay.
I don't want to be that guy that, like, you know, hey, you should do that. You know, I kind of want to try and maybe ease that question in. I don't want to just be that guy, you know. I'm very cautious when it comes to.
Yeah.
I like to be very respectful, so I don't want to like step on toes. I don't want to be too much. So you know, maybe if the timing's right, maybe he would do it. But I also, you know, at the same time, I kind of feel like he probably doesn't want to be on stage until he's there with Superjoint.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like there's that aura about him that's like. You don't see him until
right.
he gets on that stage. You know,
well, I
thought
what I mean? That was strange about the. Dude from Guar coming out with you guys, because he would come out early
Yeah.
To do the cover with you and before Guar, but he's in full costume.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
So it was kind of odd to me that he would come out early like that and do the cover with you guys.
Yeah, and you know, but I think also at the same time he had to be in costume ready to go anyway.
Right.
So he was just kind of pre-ready. And then, because that was the last song, and then he would just go back. And he could take off his mask or whatever, right. But he'd be ready to go, suited up, you know, so. But yeah, I don't know. Like I said, we still haven't even brought it up to Phil. I don't even know if he's ever even heard the cover. So maybe.
You busted out a sound check or anything?
No, because we don't get a sound check. Okay. It's like we're support, so we more or less, you know, Super Joint sound checks, we backline. So we don't really get that opportunity to do that. But I don't know. You know, like I said, if I get a chance to maybe, you know, chat with them some more and maybe if he, because he was like telling me about the, when he was talking about the Horan side project, he's like, I'll give you $1,000 to do it. I might be like, well, instead of $1,000, how about you just get up on stage and do this song with us, you know?
That's
but
funny.
Yeah, like I said, man, like, you know, hopefully. It would be absolutely a dream come true to have that happen. However, I am plenty fucking happy just being out here on the road with these guys. So,
yeah, when he did the ID for the show, it was at the meet and greet, and I was like, in lieu of an autograph, will you please just speak into this mic, you know, into this recorder and say, hey, this is Philip H. Anselmo, you know, which he did, and he was very cool about it. And you know, actually, the people around him were kind of. Not the people with the club were kind of mad that I was stopping traffic, basically.
Yeah.
And he like, no, just let me do this real quick kind of thing. I was very grateful for that.
Yeah, Phil's very fucking cool with his fans. And, you know, you got to love him for that, man. You know, just to people that respect and love him so much and he gives time for those people. It's awesome.
Very cool, man. Well, hey. The Pantera Far Beyond Driven episode that we did actually was a very heavily downloaded episode. I was actually taken aback because, you know, my show is a very... Well, the cops are coming to get us. But my show is a very...
Last time someone throwing up cut us out, so now it's the cops.
Right. Dude, when I edited that, I was listening. You could hear it so clear. We're like,
really?
we're talking, then all of a sudden you hear like feet and like.
You should use that as like a soundbite
right?
in your show.
I have to go back and see if I still have it. I don't know if I kept it on or not. But so I figured we could break down a little "Seasons in the Abyss" by Slayer.
Let's do it.
You guys did a great cover of you did War Ensemble, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So, and the way that this episode will come out, probably be after it'll be after either Dez or. Jimmy Bauer. So,
okay.
And I do covers now on before the episode, like cover of the week type stuff. So I'll have played that by the time this episode's out.
Okay.
So it's very cool. And, you know, just kind of covering that song. Was anything, you know, crazy, little getting into it, trying to figure it out, and anything technically hard?
Yeah. I mean, that song's a bitch because it's just so. We played it. I think it was really fast when we recorded it. It was a. You know, I think we might have even stepped it up a little faster than what Slayer did.
I almost feel like
on the recording.
Did, yeah.
And it's a fucking tough song. It's a tough and easy song. You know, the riffs are pretty easy, but just playing it that fast is like, holy shit. The solo was kind of like the most difficult part for me personally, but that song we just felt would be like such a perfect cover for us. And around the time that we decided to do it, you know, it was kind of like a management idea. Why don't you release a cover? Sort of keep the news about us sort of relevant. You know, I think it was like in between before we'd done Rise to Power. So we were trying to do something to sort of keep fans engaged. And,
yeah.
You know, hey, we're still here and maybe make it some sort of exclusive thing. But War Ensemble was something we had done, I think, in the past. And we decided to bring it back and record it. So, yeah, man, it's just such an abrasive, just straight to the punch song that... You know, I think it's one of those. I look at it as somewhat kind of like the fucking Hostile a little bit of what Pantera did with. You know, whenever you hear Tom Araya go, it's time for war. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, it's gonna be fucking madness. You know,
oh, yeah.
And I feel like you know, kind of like with Hostile, it's kind of that same thing. So, I think that's why we sort of wanted to tackle that song. It's just such a fucking abrasive song. That I think people can get into, and you know, metal fans know it. So
absolutely, and that, so one thing too is I do believe it is a little bit fast what the cover you guys did. But I remember hearing it. I think that might have been when I had satellite radio. I'm not sure how I heard it, but I remember hearing it going, "Holy fuck, they did an amazing cover!" And I'm a huge stickler on, you know, covers, especially metal covers. You know, a metal band doing a metal cover of, you know, like your Pantera cover was great, Slayer cover was great. I think when I had Gumby on the podcast forever ago, I think I was like, so what's next? And he's like, man, we get that question all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, we've talked about another cover, and I think this time we maybe want to get away from doing another metal band's cover and maybe try
something
different.
Just do the tried and true 80s cover.
Yeah, yeah. I know that's kind of cliche, too, but, I mean, you know, sometimes I think it's kind of fun to step outside of that, you know.
Absolutely.
I mean, everyone says, well, Metallica's next. I mean, yeah, I guess we could do that. And we have covered Metallica before in the past as far as live, but
yeah,
I don't know. You know, for me, I'm just sort of, like, tired of doing the... I don't want to keep doing the same sort of, like, oh, they covered this band, or this metal band again, you know. I kind of would like to do something a little different. But, yeah, you know, very happy with how both those covers for Hostile and War Ensemble turned out, so...
Rock again. Hello, everybody. This is Max Cavalera, Soulfly, Return to Roots. And you are listening to Talk to Me. Stay metal. Oi!
Seasons of the Abyss by Slayer, released October 9th, 1990. How did you come across this album?
It was way, way after, you know, I didn't get into Slayer until maybe 99, 2000. Yep. I was a late sort of metal fan as far as getting in the old school shit. But I first saw them at Ozfest 99. That was my first time ever seeing Slayer. And I was like, holy shit, man. Like, I just remember looking around and just seeing fans lose their mind. And I was like, damn, dude. Like I've always seen the shirt Slayer. Yeah. I always knew of the band Slayer.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just never heard the music, you know?
Right.
So I was finally, you know, like, I'm going to check out Slayer. And actually, the first album I ever got by Slayer was Diabolus and Musica.
Yeah.
And I love that album. Because of that, it was kind of my introduction to them. You know, then it was Rain and Blood. And then Seasons of the Abyss, I can't even remember when I got it. But it was kind of like after I had gotten, you know, Rain and Blood and, you know, maybe a couple other. I mean, I might have even had God Hates Us All before that album. But, you know, I was finally like, I fucking love Slayer. I'm buying all their shit.
Right, right.
But Seasons in the Abyss, you know, I just think that record is like, you know, you listen from South of Heaven, I feel like was that next step to where they got away from staying consistently fast throughout all their shit. They started to kind of get more dynamic. And I feel like Seasons in the Abyss sort of perfected that. Mm-hmm. You know, they really sort of branched out a little bit into not just being constantly fast, but every song of that album is still abrasive.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know what I mean? There's not, to me, there's not a filler song in there.
No,
you know,
no.
In my opinion. And I think, and I love that Live Aggression has pretty much like the entire right. Season of the Abyss live like in there. It's, I mean, fucking just, I love the riffing in that is perfect. And it's just, you know, the last Dave Lombardo album, obviously until they did Christ Illusion.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just such an abrasive album, and I love that about that album in particular. I think there's a lot of catchiness in that record.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into Dave Lombardo, and it's a huge part of Slayer. But my getting into it, I think I'd kind of gotten into. I'm totally a kid that got into the Black Album by Metallica, and then got more into metal. I was listening to hard rock like Kiss and a lot of hair bands before that. But when the Black Album came out, blew my mind in 91. And then, so around that time, I'm like, well, what else is heavy? And a lot of Headbangers Ball at the time, and Headbangers Ball was wearing Seasons of the Abyss, the video, out.
That's awesome.
And so, you know, I went and got that, and I got the live album, what you were talking about. And it was, I remember it was like a two cassette little box deal for the live cassette. It was like a two cassette deal back in the day. So yeah, I got that one too. So yeah, this album to me is
I love, by the way, I love how the album has no overdubs or anything. It's just raw, live Slayer.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that Decade of Aggression album is just fucking awesome.
Yeah. It was always a cool, just a, you know, being a kid and wanting to play music and seeing that there was a really cool shot of the crowd or the stage and everything. And you're like, man, one day I'm going to do that.
Fuck yeah.
And so, let's see here, man. Fifth studio album by Slayer, blah, blah, blah. October 9th, 1990, like I said. There was something in here I thought that was kind of cool. Oh, it actually charted at number 40 on Billboard, and which I thought was crazy because number 40, 1990, you know, that was hard to do. That's not, you know, albums now are charting at 40, selling 30 copies a week. But now, you know, back then, I mean, that was, to crack the top 50 would probably have been an insane thing for them to do. So, you know, it definitely just, you know, shows that their fan base was there. I mean, I guess that was around the time that they were doing the what was it, Slayer, Megadeth, Anthrax, Alice in Chains tour, the Clash of the Titans tour. So I mean, that would have all been at the same time, and so this album.
Yeah,
came
I mean,
out.
If you think about what, so Black Album maybe was Black Album was maybe what after that?
Yeah, Black Album was August of 91.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, they were sort of before all that. Yeah. You know, putting that album out.
Yeah, I mean, you got, you know, I guess Justice for All, and then Rest in Peace would have been out, and then you got this. I mean, what a great time for music.
Yeah, seriously. You know? But I was too young.
Yeah,
I was born in '83, so I was probably, yeah.
Ah, so you were a late bloomer to metal, period.
Yeah,
man.
I was.
Wow.
I really was. I didn't get into metal until like '94.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, but like I said, Far Beyond Driven was kind of like my introduction to Pantera, but I almost wasn't ready for it at the time.
Right.
You know, and it was just, whoa, this is awesome, but I don't even know what to do with it, you know, at this moment. Oh, they're sending in the chopper,
yeah,
man.
The chopper
we're going down here.
Well, we're in a good bad part of town. It's like hipsters over here and like projects over here.
Really?
So you're kind of in an area. But yeah, I mean, actually, I remember hearing Cowboys from Hell and maybe even Vulgar Display of Power before I got into Far Beyond Driven.
Yeah.
And just not really clicking. I'm like, this seems really crazy. And it really bothered me, like, when the solo would happen and all the guitars would drop out except for Dime's guitar. And,
yeah.
And that, as a kid, I was like, that just doesn't feel right. But then now I'm like,
that's fucking perfect.
Pantera.
Yeah, like, yeah,
Dime
exactly.
Can't do anything wrong. But, all right. So, obviously, we've talked a little bit about War Ensemble, but, man, what a killer opener to an album.
Yes. I mean, that, what a way to kick off the record.
You can't even...
Just pummeling you in the face.
Right.
You know? And just what a time that they wrote that record because, I mean, that was around the time of the Gulf War, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
So, I mean, War Ensemble, what a, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was sort of perfectly, politically, I guess, you know, at the right moment, you know, it made sense what right. was going on, you know.
Yeah, I've never been a big lyric guy. And actually going back listening to this album, I was trying to, you know, getting a little bit more so we could talk a little bit more in depth about it. Because I'm like, if you're playing your guitars right, you're screaming right, you know, I'm not really too worried about your lyrical
yeah,
content.
Yeah, same here.
So it's kind of hard for me to get into the lyrics too much. But, you know, when I remember hearing this as a kid. It may be listening a little bit more to lyrics at the time because back then you didn't have as many distractions and just, you know, the final swing is not a drill. It's how many people, you know, yeah. that type of stuff. And you're just like, you're like, wow, this is obviously about war. I mean, it's in the title, but it's telling you so much stuff and you're basically going off to war and, you know, and you know, killing is the end game type stuff. So, yeah,
it's very just blunt, like just sort of like the harshest look at like what war is like, you
yeah.
know, and it's like. It's like if someone went on TV and told you exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
This is what a soldier's going through. It's not, you know, yeah, they're going out there and, like, you know, when they build it up on the news or media, you know, soldiers out there fighting for our freedom or whatever. But then when you think about the sort of the end game of what war is all about, it's going out there to kill motherfuckers.
Right.
You know? And it's like, that is, like, their reality is to kill.
Yeah.
Another human being, you know, that is the objective in war.
I was watching a thing today, and this is totally off subject, but I was watching a thing today about the Purple Heart and Purple Heart medals or whatever, and I guess they had made 500,000 for World War II because that's what they thought was going to happen at D-Day. They thought they were going to lose 500,000 people, so they made 500,000 Purple Hearts, but that didn't happen. So a lot of those World War II Purple Hearts were given out during Vietnam. And so, I mean, but the reality of that was they thought they were going to lose 500,000 people and they still send them into war. You know, that's
wow.
crazy
yeah.
that they thought that.
That is crazy.
There
yeah.
was a number attached.
Like they, yeah, that they prepared. Oh, yeah, we're going to lose about these. Like, these are people's lives.
Right.
Like, you're just treating them like it. Yeah, it's crazy, man.
And then another thing I like about this album is instead of, like, I guess the standard 2 seconds between songs, this is like one.
Yeah.
And you know, basically. So when I went back to listen to it and had to listen to each individual song, because to me, this album is one long 47-minute song.
Yeah.
In all honesty, I can listen to this album start to finish and start it over and over. But, you know, so that 1 second in between it just kills it, you know. And then,
yeah.
So basically you go from War Ensemble to Blood Red, another yes. fantastic song.
Blood Red, man. Such a good fucking song. Love it. Yeah. I've definitely had that album on repeat for a long time, so.
Yeah. Yeah, Blood Red is actually, going back, analyzing it, probably almost one of my maybe least favorite songs on this album.
Really?
And it's actually coming off of War Ensemble. It's not a very good second track. You know, there's a lot of great mm-hmm. killer songs on this one, but, Blood Red was, analyzing it, it wasn't the best of a second song. So, you know, going into Spirit in Black.
Yeah.
Another classic.
Spirit in Black, man. That's got a good hook.
Yeah.
It's just, I love the chorus in that.
Yeah.
It's just got that, it's almost got that groove, you know, groove feel to it where it's just like kind of like the halftime. Spirit in Black to the end.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like.
Well, Blood Red and Spirit in Black both have kind of, when he says like Blood Red, there's like a weird, Dave Lombardo does a weird little, little drum fill behind it. And to where, you know, this is not necessarily a straightforward 100% thrash album. Like, Dave came in and played some crazy drums under what they did. And so much flair, and it's not just your typical 4-4, you know, double bass,
right.
you know, hi-hat to ride cymbal back to hi-hat yeah. type stuff. He was very innovative on this album. But yeah, and we'll go ahead and get into Expendable Youth, because that song right there is just a monster.
Yeah. So. Yeah, Expendable Youth, there you go. Like sort of a Disposable Heroes. Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, same sort of thing, you know, going back to the war, tying into the war thing. And, you know, I also heard that, like, Kerry actually, like, took guitar lessons around this time. So okay. sort of, like, they got better at sort of, like, making their solos make sense musically. Because before, they used to just go off.
Right.
And that was kind of like maybe the Slayer sound, you know, it was this unorthodox yeah. way of playing. But it was the first time, I think, that, you know, on this record that they sort of like got cohesive in that sense and really sort of were like having the solid structure of songs. And then, you know, the solos were, you know, sort of written to fit,
yeah.
you know, the song perfectly.
Were you, you know? Did you get into Slayer enough to where you were either a Jeff or Kerry guy, or like, you know, you liked the solo?
You know, when I look at it and you look at like who's written what, I mean, you got to give praise to Jeff, man.
Oh, Jeff was a monster.
Jeff wrote a lot of the fucking mm-hmm. the best Slayer songs.
Yeah.
You know, and I think he was sort of underrated for that. You know, like Kerry got a lot more attention, I think, than Jeff did. And when you look at it, it's like, man, Jeff wrote the fucking the riffs, man. Yeah. Like, you know, and there's just that vibe about him that, you know, he just had that attitude with the writing. And. And I think he brought in a lot of that punk.
Oh yeah,
the punk feel to it, you know. So, yeah, man, Jeff was one of a kind, I think, with his style of playing. And rest in peace, Jeff, man. I mean, it's just like, you know, it's like I said, he's one of those dudes that I think still somewhat gets underlooked in the overall broad scheme of like guitar players or musicians, you know.
Yeah.
So,
like, when you get into like Jeff's, like the punk rock guitar that he had with all the stickers, the yeah. logos of all the old punk rock bands, and that's one of those things where you see that and you're like, all right, well, I need to check out those bands because they influenced Jeff Hanneman. So you want to go back and check them out, like you would if you see Phil wearing a obituary shirt or something, right, you're like, well, who's that? You know, yeah, you got to go exactly. check out that band.
Yep.
So that's totally, you know, Jeff was totally the punk rocker of the band, you
yeah.
know. And I kind of wish I could sit down and pick out who was who. But what you're saying about Slayer solos was, you know, when they would go off and get a little are they really playing, like, theory? You know, are those right. actual scales? You know, the Slayer solos, to me, as good as they are, remind me of what anybody would do if they picked up a guitar and were like, let's play a heavy metal solo.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, totally.
Obviously, Slayer's doing it well, but they're like, nah, 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 you know?
Yeah, just a crazy, chaotic...
Yeah, the
sound
chaos
of it was that was their sound. I mean, if you think about it, it was yeah. just like them going off on like that. It just that to me added to the Slayer sound.
Yeah.
So, you know, and they still kept that with when Seasons in the Abyss, but maybe, you know, I think they tried to get a little more okay, let's stay in key with this part right. or something, you know.
Right, right.
But yeah.
Oh, yeah. Expendable Youth, an amazing song. And then right into Dead Skin Mask, which I think might be my favorite Slayer song.
Yes. That riff, man. It's yeah. It's just haunting. You
yeah.
know, dance with the, you know, like total Ed Gein song. Like, yeah. You know, and I think how many bands have, you know, written songs about Ed Gein?
Right.
But Dead Skin Mask, it's cool. It's got this haunting, slow vibe to it. And that's like what I was going back to was how... This is kind of that album where they sort of stepped out of just playing super fast and sort yeah. of broke it down a little bit, you know, which they did in South of Heaven. But, you know, here it's like they had this, it's just such an iconic song because it's so, I think it's just got that dark feel and it's just so, it's such a slow song, yeah. but it's you can still headbang to it.
Well, I like that. And then my first band I ever got into was Kiss. So this is a very God of Thunder intro, you know, with the kids playing. And you know, it just made it even creepier, you know. And plus
yeah.
being 12, 11, whatever I was when I first heard this, you know, you can, you know, people trying to steal kids and, you know, doing all that stuff to them is probably a little bit more of the time or something. You know, you're probably a little bit more worried about a van pulling up and stealing
yeah.
you at the time, you know.
Yeah, right.
And like how I was never stolen as a kid, I'll never know, because I probably would have got in the van with anybody. But this song, you know, just to me, it's just like you said, it's haunting, it's slow, it's, you know, got the spoken word stuff in it, and,
yeah,
you know, all that just. And as a kid, you know, this song scared the shit out of me, which I loved. And I loved this, you know, Dance with the Dead in My Dreams, listen to how it screams, all
yeah.
that stuff. Like, as a kid, the heavy metal kid inside me was just like, this is the best song I've ever heard.
Yeah. And it, like I said, it's just, I think it also, you know, who knows? It might have opened doors to people that weren't Slayer fans before to like, oh shit, like this is like fucking catchy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I think they were pulling in probably a new fan base from that too, probably because, you know, it wasn't just the fast Slayer song that you're used to. It was like, it had this groove feel to it. And it was, you know, it was a catchy song with a catchy chorus and all that stuff. So, I think overall, maybe they're just sort of being more catchy, I guess, with this album.
Right?
More,
yeah, it was definitely
a
catchy album. Don't get me
wrong. Yeah, it definitely is. Yeah, but it's still, like I said, it's still heavy.
Yeah.
And it's still got the Slayer tone to it, you
know? Absolutely.
You are listening to Talk To Me.
Glenn Benton Deicide, and you're listening to Talk to Me.
I love the whole war theme of this album.
Yeah,
Hallowed
Flame is great.
Yeah.
I always remember this because my first ever band, they had changed the name before I joined it, but their first ever name was Velocity because of that song, like High Velocity.
Nice,
blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And you're like, ooh, Velocity, that's a heavy
that sounds nasty.
We changed it to Lycanthropy. And now all we did was play like Metallica covers, but still we had a name, you know, and a logo and everything else. But yeah, High Velocity, you know, yeah, Hollowed Point. So you go from Dead Skin Mask into the war ensemble, you know, Hollow Point, very, very fast up-tempo.
Yes, yeah, and I like that, you know, it's sort of like abrasive, just a little bit, let's drop it down a little bit, back to fucking punching you in the face. You know, I love that. I love that sort of up and down it goes with the songs. I think that's fucking great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can't go wrong with, man, what just, like I said before, man, this album is just literally a 47-minute thrash song.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, you know, and then you got Skeletons of Society.
Yes.
Which is another.
That kind of breaks it down again, you know. Yeah. It's got that. You know, it's just like.
Skeletons of Society,
you know. Yeah. Catchy. Catchy choruses, oh, man. They really went on the catchiness. Trying to get that new fan base.
Let's see. And then let me make sure that this is the song.
Fucking cool riff. Temptation.
Yeah. All right, this is the one. All right, so, you know, Temptation is next, and this is the one I actually read about because I always thought that cool, like where Tom is, you know, kind of mirroring what he says.
Yeah.
Where he says the line, then he repeats it. And I just read today or yesterday that was a mistake, that he sang it the way that he wanted to sing it, and then he sang it the way that Carrie wanted to sing it, and then when they played it back, they were off just enough to where they're like, oh, fuck, we need to keep that.
No shit.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I had no idea.
Yeah, that's a...
Uncertainty, reflections of treachery. Would you leave the world behind?
And all this time I'm like, they are geniuses. You know?
Yeah, yeah. It was a happy accident.
Right, it ends up being just a happy accident. But yeah, that song just. Oh.
It's just crushing. You know what I mean? Like, there was no bullshit. It was kind of like going back to Rain and Blood a little bit and just kind of like that no bullshit attitude with the songwriting that Slayer tends to keep. It's just that fucking, we're going to hit you. And they kept that, like I said, they kept that abrasiveness, but they also added the melody and they added the hooks in there that, like, drew people in to, like, okay, like, this, I can tap my foot to this,
right.
I can fucking sing along to it, but it's still really fucking heavy and I can punch someone in the face to it as well, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I just, like, you know, as much as I love the last time we did Far Beyond Driven, this is probably, you know, another top 10 of all time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's hard for me to be like, well, this is where they really, you know, maybe next time you come through, we'll do some shitty album and just shit on something all day, but but it's hard for me not to just, you know, what is it, the have a huge heavy metal boner for this one.
I know, yeah, man. So, Season's the Abyss, dude.
Season of the Abyss. And then, you know, obviously into Born of Fire,
mm-hmm.
another just great song. And Tom's voice on this, that whole album, man, it's just such a cool voice. Like, I'm not a huge lyric guy. I could care less, really, how political you're being or what kind of stance you're taking. But as long as your voice is almost like another instrument in the music.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's another vocalist like him. But
Nobody sounds like Tom.
And then another.
Nobody sounds like him, you know?
Yeah.
He is one of a kind vocalist. And man, I mean, for as long as they've been going, man, that dude's just been yelling into a mic.
Right.
Fucking, you know? Like, I mean, he I love that he was so open to, like, even trying different things with his voice, and even on this, kind of getting more almost kind of singing with it.
Yeah, he got singing, and also he also went lower. Like, a lot of times on the early albums, he would finish a phrase and go, like, start screaming, and on this one, he kind of started doing the more, like,
yeah.
He was trying to go real low. And then even on the live album, like we were talking about earlier, some of those high screams he would do there on the live album, he did the lower ones and stuff.
Yeah.
So, Chemical
Tom's
Warfare,
awesome.
he did the lower on the live album. Into the masterpiece of a song.
Yes. Seasons in the Abyss, man. One of the fucking just most haunting riffs ever.
Yeah.
Seriously, like that. that just that song and stuff and just how it kicks in, it's so chilling.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember I loved how Pantera would always play that before they went on stage.
Yeah.
Or at least when I had seen them.
Okay.
In 2000.
Right.
When I saw them on the Reinventing the Steel Tour and Extreme Steel Tour. I don't even know if they did it on Extreme Steel because Slayer was on it.
Right. Well, but, I mean, I guess in some weird way they might have, Slayer may have played it last before.
Yeah. But I had heard that was kind of their warm-up song.
Yeah.
Seasons in the Abyss. They would play that just sort of before to pump them up.
Yeah.
And it's just, I love that, just that riff is so evil,
yeah,
man. It just sounds, oh, man.
Not to get too much into the video, but I think the video was the perfect, like, now that song sounds like a desert to me.
Yeah.
Like, don't down. Yeah, you get all that going. It's a masterpiece of a song.
Yeah.
Like, and then that's when songs, like, truly had intros. Like, that was an intro.
Yes. God, they're so good at writing intros, man. Raining Blood, man. Yeah, like,
even the Dead Skin Mask one we were talking about a second ago. Like, that whole intro is awesome.
Yeah. And,
you know, this one's 14 minutes of intro.
Yeah.
And then you get into that riff, too. It's just the dun 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 dun
dun. Just a little harmony. Yep. Doo doo doo.
I wonder if that
had to do
with...
got the clean guitar there, and then...
I wonder if that had to do with,
just like
Carrie's guitar lessons.
Yeah.
They're like, oh shit, Carrie took guitar lessons.
Yeah. I guess we're gonna do some cool shit here.
Yeah, man, Season of the Abyss is fucking great, great, great album. I mean, I didn't even realize that was an album closer for some reason. I always thought it was somewhere in the middle, but
it's a great closer, man. It goes from, like I said, it goes, kicks you in the dick. It's got the little point in the middle that sort of breaks it down a bit, gets back to being abrasive, and just ends it with something just very slow and heavy and powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Such a great musical song. Like, it's,
yes.
And I just can't say enough great things about Seasons in the Abyss, obviously.
It's definitely a must-have album. You know, I put it up there with their, you know, classics. It's definitely a classic album to me, so...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like I said, I don't even know if I told you the story of how I got it, but someone had given me a dubbed copy taped over something. I don't even remember what we had taped over, but, it, you know, doing the whole put a piece of tape over the little holes in the top of the cassette. Because I remember it was something else. It was like an Extreme cassette or something, and we taped over it. And I wore my Walkman that summer. I can remember walking around the apartment complex that we lived in with my headphones on, my Walkman that was falling apart, and just loving the shit out of this album. So, and to this day, you know, you throw it on the Spotify or CD player, MP3 player, record player, whatever you got, it's still just start to finish as a classic album.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, man.
Any last words on Seasons in the Abyss?
All I can say, man, is that it's one of those records that, you know, I list as a favorite Slayer album.
Absolutely.
And I definitely, you know, if I'm going to tell someone to check out Slayer, it's probably going to be Rain and Blood and Seasons in the Abyss.
Absolutely.
You know, of course. And, you know, a couple other albums that I thought were under it, like Divine. I love Divine Intervention.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking great album. Show No Mercy, of course. But, you know, Seasons in the Abyss, man, that was like I said, it's got that abrasive... Like, I would say that I would give Seasons in the Abyss to someone that's like, you know, I've heard Slayer before, or maybe, like, hasn't heard that album, but heard maybe some of their older stuff, or maybe some of the newer stuff, and still, like, liked it, but wasn't sold on it.
Yeah.
I'd be like, dude, check out this album, because it's got just that good balance of, like, very good songwriting, and aggression and dynamic.
Yep.
You know, and I think that Slayer really accomplished that with that album. You know, Rain and Blood was like the nonstop fucking kicking in the dick, lefty, like just 36 minutes of just aggression. You know, South of Heaven, I love that album. That's another one of my favorites. But, you know, there's also that album, it has a weird different dynamic to it as well. But I think that just Seasons in the Abyss kind of had the most songs that were like recognizable,
yeah,
you know, the most hits, I would guess you'd say, is right? Slayer songs go.
Absolutely, man.
So,
all right, and then just back around to Battlecross. What's the immediate future of Battlecross? Super Joint Tour into, what are you doing next?
After this tour, we don't have anything lined up, man, so we're just sort of waiting to see what's coming up, you know, try and do some writing while we're home, and, you know, no set date on when we're going to be in the studio or nothing like that. So, you know, we're, like I said, we're taking our time, and we're just going to go with the flow and see what comes up and go from there, man.
Very cool, man. And Gumby's back. I saw him
Gumby's
a second
back.
Ago.
Yeah, it was funny. I was like, oh, yeah, you haven't been to this venue yet, have you? So it's his first time here. So
yeah, you're like, I've been here like 90 times.
I've been here, yeah. It was funny. I was like, I saw my buddy Nate because him and I both have been here. He was with me when I had the Phil Anselmo thing. I was like, I've been here more times than anybody in the band. So yeah, I like this venue, though. It's
do you
really
think
fun.
That you're going and meeting Phil had anything to do with kind of this tour?
Like, I think so. Like I think building that reputation with them definitely helped. Yeah. You know, I was very, and I owe that to actually their security guy, Christian.
Yeah.
He, the first time Superjoint came through Machine Shop a couple years ago, and I went to see him, and we were waiting outside for him. I'm like, yeah, I mean, I don't know if he's going to come out. And my friend was working at the Machine Shop. He's working security. I was like, hey, is Phil going to come out? And he's like, I don't know. And I'm like, my friend just wants to get her, you know, her banner signed. She had this, like, Phil banner, cloth right. banner.
Oh, cool.
And I'm like, you know, if there's any way he can just, like, sign and that's it. Like, I'm not asking to, like, even meet him and just have him sign that. So he talked to Christian, and Christian had apparently heard of Battlecross because he's like, hey, you know, the guy from Battlecross is here. He wants to see if he can get this signed by Phil. And Christian was super cool and introduced me to Phil and told him I was in Battlecross, and Phil just immediately hugged me. It was like, you know, I apparently had heard of us because he was like, you're in Battlecross, and just said very kind words. And so then I came down here again for that, for the Q&A thing, and, you know, Phil remembered me, you know, so. And then, you know, kind of I got his email and stuff like that, and we just sort of conversed a little bit back and forth.
Right.
And yeah, so I definitely think that helped a lot. Getting to know him really helped this, you know, being able for us to be out here with them. So
right.
for sure.
Well, when the other band dropped off, I'm sure he was just like, what about Battlecross?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, you know, that's the type of thing where it would be in his brain, like, oh,
yeah,
yeah,
it's awesome.
Battlecross, you know?
I think it's also a mixture because we had the same booking agent, too. So
okay.
I think it's just a mixture of all that stuff. You know, I don't want to say it was all me that
right.
got it. You
well,
know,
which
I think,
it was. But,
I think it's just a mixture of all that together. But,
yeah.
you know, I definitely think that maybe if I had never met Phil and never came, you know, who knows?
Right.
Who knows? I can't say that it couldn't have, but I think it definitely helped for sure. So
very cool. Well, Haran, thanks for taking the time today, man.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, brother. Thank you for having me.
We'll be right back. forget your name. Step outside yourself and let your thoughts stray as you go insane, go insane. Step outside yourself and let your mind go. Frozen eyes stare deep in your mind as you die. Close your eyes and forget your name. Step outside yourself and let your thoughts stray as you go insane, go insane.
Hey, this is Jim Brewer, and thanks for listening to the Talk to Me podcast. Not you, talk to me.
All right, that was Seasons in the Abyss by Slayer. That was my talk with Haran from Battlecross. And, you know, last summer, Mike and I went and saw Slayer at Louder Than Life here in Louisville, Kentucky. And, we were just talking as the interview played, we'll say that, you know, just how I was actually really bummed out. You know, that was Slayer, that's with Gary Holt, which I think did a fantastic job. I think he probably looks coolest of one of all of them up there. But, you know, Tom's not allowed to headbang anymore. Carrie's Carrie. And then Paul Bostoff's playing drums, and I'm not a Paul Bostoff fan at all. And it just sounded really bad. And so we, you know, I guess we just watched about half of the show and then went back for the media tent for something. But it was pretty rough, man.
Yeah, and the guitars were just non-existent. Yeah, not just for Slayer, but at the festival as a whole. I mean, Korn was there. You couldn't hear guitars. Yeah.
By the time we got back to the media tent, I don't know if they'd fixed the guitars or what, but I think the set got a little bit better. I think they were playing maybe like new songs early, and so by the time we got back to the media tent, you know, they were playing like Dead Skin Mask and stuff like that. And I was like, God damn it. How are we back here?
Yeah.
And then,
yeah, because we were pretty close.
Yeah, it was really.
We were pretty close. And we ran into that Mike guy and his family of crazy. You remember all that.
Oh, yeah. Dudes. You guys have to. I don't know. Are the old episodes of Off Our Meds podcast available? Because if they are, they need to go back.
I think they're collector's items at this point. I think they've been deleted or moved, or I don't know how that's going. So,
rest in peace, Off Our Meds.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, but I mean, I'll have to get that. We did a Slayer fan kind of coverage of the festival.
Yeah,
I'll have to chop that up eventually. I still have all the episodes, so I'll have to let that air at some point.
Slayer. Yeah, you got a bunch. I was with you guys when you guys were walking up to random people and getting them to scream Slayer. And the other thing that was funny about that is how willing people were. I mean, all you had was a recorder and a mic. And they're like, hell yeah, I'll scream Slayer into your microphone.
Yeah. And what killed me is we had all of these people, you know, giving it their all, their best, you know, fucking Slayer. And then you would come up to some people and they'd be like, hell yeah, man, fucking Slayer. It's like, what are you talking about? Yeah. And then we ran into that Mike guy and, man, that was classic. I still have that. So at some point, maybe that'll make a reappearance somewhere at some point, but we'll see.
Very cool. Very cool. Thank you guys for checking out the podcast this week. Thanks to Haran from Battlecross for coming on once again. Make sure you're checking out Battlecross on whatever platform you get your music on. Make sure to check out their cover of Fucking Hostile. It's fucking fantastic. All right, guys, we will see you guys next week with our guest, Alan Roberts of Life of Agony. Got a chance to sit down with him recently, so got a nice long interview with him. So for the Talk To Me podcast, I'm Toomey.
And I'm Mike. From Music Mags and Wax on Twitter, or you can find me on Instagram under MDG Rock Picks. Swing by and give the page a like and give me some feedback.
All right.
Good or bad.
Good or bad. All right, guys, we will see you guys next week. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey, this is Huron from Battlecross, and you're listening to Talk To Me.